Hi, I'm Jerry Motti, office manager for WPFW. And you are tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Live from Ben's Next Door, 12th and U Streets Northwest, it's the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester. It's seriously funny, and it begins right now.
Good evening, and the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, sitting here with
Garland Nixon.
And somewhere on the West Coast we have
Terry D. Kester.
I'm missing you guys. I miss the dance.
Dancing, the bowling, the all the sports that we've been doing together, not to mention the parties, the drinking, the
we understand
the details, but
we understand, Terry, you have to hide from the law, and we understand that from a secret location, Terry's
right.
On the land somewhere.
He's at an undisclosed location, kind of a Dick Cheney thing going on here, buddy. The secret bunker.
I'm way out in Oregon, one of the few states that probably will vote for President Obama.
Are you Mark, I think the revolution has started, and Terry just hasn't told us. That's what it is.
That's it.
He's hanging out with the tree huggers over there in Oregon. Well, we are hanging out at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. We are here every Tuesday in September.
Oh, boy.
So, of course, you can turn on 89.3 FM and listen to us every Tuesday, 7 to 8. Or you can come on down to Ben's Next Door, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl, and come on up back to the mezzanine and join us and eat and drink and get your 2 cents in.
Oh, yeah. We got an extra microphone if you want to be part of the Raucous Caucus. Show up. If you've got important things to say, or maybe if they're not important, but you just want to say them, the Raucous Caucus is the place to be.
Or you just want to see live radio in progress. You don't have to be on the microphone. We got a lot of people here that just come and enjoy our raucousness to see our beautiful faces or, well, We won't say who's not beautiful here.
And Terry, too.
And Terry, too. I wasn't going to say that. I let you say that. Hey, the conventions are over, gentlemen. And let's start with Terry. I presume they do have television out in Oregon. What did you think? What was for you were the highlights of the conventions?
Well, obviously, Michelle Obama's speech was incredible. And, President Obama's speech I thought was very good. Bill Clinton did a phenomenal job. He has that wonderful ability to give you knowledge and charm the socks off of you at the same time and entertain you and amuse you. And, I think we should go for a third term with Bill Clinton.
We're going to have to repeal the 22nd Amendment.
Other than that, the convention was a waste of time, like they always are. But, those three speeches were really worth the time. They were fantastic.
Well, I felt that Bill Clinton's speech was important, and it was long overdue, because what he did was he took apart some very flimsy arguments that the Republicans were making, and I think me as well as you guys, a lot of us were probably sitting here wondering, why are the Democrats waiting so long to these? You could see the holes in these arguments, and we were wondering, why are the Democrats waiting so long to take these arguments apart? And finally out comes old Billy Boy and, lays waste to the GOP.
I hate to agree with you all so much when you say I want to be raucous here, but I have to say, I remember while I was watching Bill Clinton's speech, thinking to myself, this is the moment President Obama won re-election. I actually was thinking it as he was rounding the 30th or the 40th minute and just beautifully taking apart the Republican arguments. I thought, Obama's going to win. And the reason he's going to win more than any other is this single speech. Michelle Obama was great. Don't get me wrong. She really, one thing I really liked about her speech was that she wasn't just saying, Barack's a good guy that I married, like Ann Romney said, Mitt's a good guy I married. But she was talking about the values they shared, and implicitly, in a very clever way, not a very direct way, but a very clever way, she was attacking Mitt Romney's values.
Yes.
Because she was pointing out that her father worked hard and got her and her brother through college, and this whole American dream that Democrats believe in, but Republicans, are not so big on. So Michelle Obama was great. Barack Obama gave a fine speech. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it was his best speech, but it was a good speech. It was a fine speech. But Bill Clinton, the big dog, he knocked it out of the park, no question about
it. Hey, Terry, I have a question. What do you think about, this is something that I was debating someone today, actually, on TV, and that is, Generally, the debates don't move the polls much. You know what I mean? They make us feel good about ourselves, but a lot of times they don't move the polls.
Unless somebody makes a big mistake.
I think this year, because the Republicans, you know, they've got such a kind of a secret agenda going on. They won't give any specifics. There's so many holes in their premise. I think this particular year, the debates are going to be important. What do you think, Terry?
That depends on President Obama, and the reason I say that is I saw two things. One, I saw a fascinating interview with Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. I mean, probably the only progressive politician we have out there. I mean, the
certainly
guy's
our only socialist.
You know? Also, reading a book about Air America and its demise, and you know, the big question that Senator Sanders was raising is: will Obama fight? Will President Obama fight? And I mean that in the most aggressive Al Franken sense, you know. And I think that's the question for Americans in general, or Democrats in general, and progressives. Are they willing to fight? And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take Teddy Roosevelt style, Franklin Delano Roosevelt style. It's going to take really aggressive, you know, fighting. Let me just give you a little reading here from this book I'm reading about Air America. And what we're up against, guys, this is what we're up against, debates or no debates.
Yeah, I was there with Air America before it was formed.
For American progress. The average adult American, the study found, this is only a few years back, listened to 19 hours of radio per week. More than 50 million listeners specifically tuned in to talk radio each week, number only second to country and Western music. What they heard was overwhelmingly voices from the right. In the top 257 stations owned by only five companies, more than 90% of the talk show hosts were conservative. In terms of the number of hours aired, the ratio actually stood at 10-1, conservative to progressive.
I actually think it's more
That's
than 10 to 1.
That's what we're up against, guys, and we got to fight.
Well, listen, I think it's more than 10 to 1. I was there. I started radio actually a few months just before Air America, about 9 months before, and I remember at the time, I went to radio conventions, and I was literally the only liberal there in a group of 400 people, you know, headlining Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, and I've always argued that if you build it, they will come, that people listen to progressive radio, that people listen to talk radio, because we're able to explain in long form what's going on here. I think that... just to bring it back to the election, what talk radio does is it tells a long story. And one of the things that Mitt Romney's trying to do in this election and Paul Ryan is to simply glide over the details. The idea is Obama's bad, or more specifically, well, Bill Clinton put it best, we gave Obama a mess, he didn't clean up fast enough, let's throw him out and put us back in. I mean, but more specifically, they're going to tell you, you know, the economy's not perfect, blame Obama, but don't ask us what we're going to do. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are keeping their agenda secretive, and it'll be fascinating to see the debates if they actually tell us what they're going to do, because they're doing the whole realm of talk shows, everything from Meet the Press to ABC, and they're refusing to tell us what they're going to do. And what talk radio can do, as you know, Terry, is we can lay out exactly what the agenda is. We can explain it. We can explain Bill Clinton's agenda. We can't explain Mitt Romney's agenda because nobody knows what it is.
Can I give you a metaphor? I mean, I don't want
a metaphor. Sure, we're all for a metaphor.
You have a metaphor there in Oregon?
You know, the metaphor that comes to mind.
Metaphor, see? You messed them up.
You know, is the metaphor of any marketing, and particularly marketing of pharmaceuticals. You know, when you watch a, you know, Viagra commercial or whatever the heck it is, you know, the whole thing is simplistic. It's incredibly simplistic. It's gonna give you a 4-hour erection. You're gonna have the time of your life. You know, and it's really simplistic stuff.
Yep. Plus, you get to go to the mountains. You get to drink a lot and have a beautiful girl by your side.
The details are in the side effects, right?
You're right.
And the side effects, nobody pays any attention to. Nobody, except maybe some people are really concerned about their health. But for the most part, we all ignore it. It's read off real fast. Nobody cares. The debates are going to be exactly the same. The debates are marketing, and the Republicans are very skilled at marketing.
I think the debates are important for this reason. You know, the particularly the Romney camp this year, they have pretty much steered towards, you know, right-wing media outlets. They have stayed in on friendly turf, specifically, I believe, because they have some serious holes in their swing. If you call them on some of their arguments and inferences, they're going to fall apart. And if you start asking them or pushing them for details, you know, some of these positions they're taking are a house of cards. So they stayed in friendly territory. I think that what's going to happen during the debate, if President Obama is aggressive and does it correctly, he can expose the holes in their swing. Now, I think there's another, a big problem that we have is on the left, and that is, our base, to a large extent, isn't as motivated as they should be to go to the polls. We have people, and here's what's going on, and some of it, some of the, you know, right-wing machine and some of the people out here are getting apathetic, but some of the arguments they're making are working. We have people who are basically saying, okay, I'm disappointed in Barack Obama because he wasn't as progressive as all three of us clearly are. He wasn't as progressive as
he wants to be, frankly.
And as we would like him to be, so there's some level of disappointment, which is okay. It's okay. However, what's happening, and I find this in some of my discussions, are we've got people who are pretending as though the alternative is not horrific. We have people on the left are saying, well, you know, I want him to do more and more, blah, blah, blah. But they're not taking it one step further to say, but who's the other guy? The other guys are really, really bad.
Garland, I want to say, you know, you said that Mitt Romney didn't go on unfavorable media. You're absolutely right that up to the time of the conventions, he never went on Meet the Press.
Nope.
He was on Fox. But I'll tell you something. This week, last Sunday, for the first time in the entire election, Mitt Romney came on Meet the Press, a standard mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why I think he's doing it. I think he's desperate. I think he recognizes that the Democrats have so much of a better convention. Bill Clinton giving specific policies and values the Democratic Party has versus Mitt Romney's warm bunch of nothing that... Yeah. And Lion Ryan, of course, right. given his lies, that I think that he recognizes polls and elsewise that he needs now he has to go to the mainstream media. He's doing so because he's desperate. I think that's a good sign. I don't want to make people complacent.
Right.
Gosh knows, we got to have Virginia, and this station goes out to Virginia. Virginia, if Barack Obama wins Virginia, he will certainly be the next president of the United States. So I don't want anyone to be complacent. But I do think at this point it's Obama's solution.
Terry, I'm going to read something to you guys and get a little bit of a response.
Okay.
And this is Paul Ryan. He was on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. The issue of non-specificity. Stephanopoulos says, basically, the congressman, as you know, many say it's difficult to accept your word if you're not going to specify which tax loopholes you will close. Don't voters have a right to know which loopholes you're going to go after? Because for those of you who don't know, one of the issues is the Romney-Ryan camp are saying we're going to have these huge tax cuts for the rich.
$5 trillion.
$5 trillion, and we're going to pay for them with closing tax loopholes. And when asked which tax loopholes they're going to close, they say, we'll tell you that later. So at any rate, Ryan says, so Mitt Romney and I, based on our experience, think the best way to do this is to show the framework, show the outlines of these plans, and then to work with Congress. That's how you get things done. So Stephanopoulos says, isn't that a secret plan? And Ryan says, no, no, no. What we don't want is a secret plan. What we don't want is to cut some background deal like Obamacare. This is the last part. Stephanopoulos says, but why not specify the loopholes now? Why not say it right now? Now listen to his answer. Because we want to do this. We want to have this. George, we want to have this debate in the public. Now, you're on national TV in the public and someone says, why won't you tell us specifics? And you say, because I want to. We want to make sure we do this in the public.
Terry. In other words, we won't do it in public. We'll tell you later.
Yeah.
Is this going to work, Terry? Is this going to work?
I'll tell you exactly why they're doing it, and it's pure. It's a pure example of Republicans. It's because I'll tell you this. Remember one thing: one quarter of American industry last year, American companies paid zero taxes.
Yep.
Zero. One-fourth paid nothing. As we know, some of the big banks got by with paying no taxes whatsoever. What Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan will do is they will go for a tax cut and then they will take away the middle class tax deductions.
Right, they're going to raise taxes.
The illusion is, they almost sort of say it, the illusion is they're going to get private industry to take away some of their deductions, so the private industry will pay more, or the super rich will get lose some of their deductions and pay a little bit more. The reality is, and this is why they're not saying a word about it, they won't touch those deductions. They'll touch the mortgage deduction right off the
top. Oh, there's
no, what they're going to do is they're going to raise taxes on people that make under $1 million.
Yep.
They're going to raise taxes on
people that make under $100,000.
Listening to our voice. If you make any amount of money, unless you're a billionaire,
yep.
And Garland has given me a wonderful article from Huffington Post pointing out that Sheldon Adelson, you want to know why he's giving $100 million to the Republicans? Because he'll make $2 billion in a tax cut. If Mitt Romney is elected. So $100 million is chump change. He can make 20 times that amount if his $100 million gets Mitt Romney elected. So he's making a very, very clear businessman's decision. He gets 20 times his money. But that $2 billion is going to come out of your pocket.
Yes.
You're going to have to pay more taxes. You're not going to get a deduction for having children. You're not going to get a deduction for your home. You're not going to get a deduction for education. You're not going to get a deduction for health insurance. Middle class taxes have to skyrocket
yep.
to afford giving billions of dollars to billionaires.
Yeah.
They won't say it's by increasing taxes. They won't say that. They'll
no.
say we're just adjusting some of the deductions.
Closing loopholes.
Point out, Mark, fall right on us. This is the key thing that, you know, I really want to impress on people. We've got to push Obama now so that he actually fights. And
yeah.
I do mean fights.
I think he will, Terry.
If he doesn't, people are not going to rally behind him because they are disappointed.
Terry,
he's got to fight to make us believe in him.
I think that just as Bill Clinton learned a heavy lesson in his presidency, I think Barack Obama has learned the exact same lesson. One of the reasons that I was concerned, frankly, in the primary, and I did pull the lever for Obama, but I almost pulled it for Hillary. It was a very close decision for me. But one of the things that concerned me was that this recent state senator from Illinois, who hadn't been national politics very long, was naive, that he didn't understand what he was up against. And I actually think Bill Clinton, governor of Arkansas in 93 and 94, was also naive when he also had a Democratic Congress. And he let the Republicans, remember Hillary Care?
Yep.
Remember they did the exact same thing. You think Obamacare's new? They called it Hillary Care.
Yep.
And he lost the Congress in 94. And then in 95, 96, he had to sort of play in the middle to get reelected. But once President Clinton was reelected, 97, 98, he fought back hard. People forget. The Republicans tried to shut down the government again and again and again. And Bill Clinton said, you know, go ahead. They're just going to blame you. They did shut down the government. They did blame the Republicans. I think Obama has learned the exact same lessons. Unfortunately, he's learned the hard way.
Yeah.
But I think he's learned the exact same lessons that Bill Clinton learned 20 years ago and that he's imparting to everybody at the Democratic National Convention, which is that when you compromise with Republicans, particularly this group of Republicans, it ends up not being a compromise at all. It ends up giving them everything they want, and they still attack.
And I think Terry's right.
I think we better get Howard Dean in here to coach President Obama.
Yeah. I think Terry's right. I think the president has to go after them like a shark. And I do. I mean, I think he really has to rip into them here over the last. You know, when you get somebody down, you got to finish them off. He's got a little bit of a bump, and I think he really has to go after him now instead of kind of riding that out. And I think what he has to demonstrate is because the Republicans, their entire campaign is all about President Obama and the economy, and he hasn't, you know, done
performed
what he
enough.
Hasn't fixed, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that they're hiding is. Our plan to fix it is to give all your money to the wealthy people.
Right.
I think the president has to go after the what he and here's what I think he should do. He should go at not just go not go after Romney or not go after Ryan. Go after their plan because if he repeatedly attacks their plan and says their plan is going to give all the money, their plan is going to do their plan, he will expose their plan and he will force them to defend the plan.
Here's what he can
rather do. Than defend themselves.
All he has to do is say Republicans are going to end the home mortgage interest deduction. They're going to end the deduction for having kids. Do you deny it, Mitt Romney? And have Mitt Romney say, blah, blah, well, I haven't told you what I'm going to do yet. Well, do you deny that that's what you're going to do, Mitt Romney? Well, I haven't decided yet. You're running for president and you haven't decided what you're going to do yet?
Yeah.
Next question.
And so then you just keep saying he's going to do it. When he says,
just as surely as he cheated on his taxes, which we don't know because he hasn't shut his taxes.
But he can't wait until the debates to do it because you've got to remember the debates are fixed. You know, they've already signed in the contract that neither one of them can ask the other a question.
No, I don't think so.
No direct communication between them.
Terry, do you know that? Is that true?
You've got to remember that Jim Lehrer is going to be one of the moderators, and everybody follows his lead. He is softball genius of the world.
Well, no, wait a minute,
moderator.
Terry. Do you know for
they
a fact?
They challenge these guys.
Do you know for a fact they're not allowed to ask each other questions? Because I saw, who did I see on the air?
Yes.
Was it Candy Crowley? It may have been Jim Lehrer. No, I'll tell you who it was. It was CBS guy. What's his name? Older guy at CBS.
I don't know. Not Brokaw.
No, that's NBC.
NBC, yeah.
Bob Schieffer? Yeah, Bob Schieffer. I think he's one of the debate monitors, and he was talking about the fact that he's going to have them ask each other questions.
Well, that's really...
Which would be great.
They've agreed to it in a contract not to.
Have you read that contract?
That's I forget the name of the organization. I interviewed the guy. Yep. It's Open Debates, I think, is the name of the organization. Has a copy of the contract, which is almost impossible to get. And these guys have been fighting this for years. It's Open Debates. You go to their website. And it very clearly states that neither candidate will ask the other any questions.
And normally, it's almost etiquette that they don't, because it can be a risky thing to do. You know,
it's not a risky thing to do.
Ask a person a question, then they can end up, you know, shooting you down. I mean, because when you go face to face with a person, if they win that particular confrontation, what will happen is if they win that particular confrontation, people will throw out the rest of the debate and say they won the debate because they got one confrontation. So you're better off. And I don't think the president has to face Mitt Romney. In fact, I think he's better off to stay away from Romney. Mitt Romney doesn't mind defending himself, but he's not going to be able to defend his policies.
I want to know if both you gentlemen agree with me that at this point it's Barack Obama's race to lose. I made a bet with Terry, I don't know, was it 6 months ago, 9 months ago? I bet you that Barack Obama would be reelected, and I'm going to win my dollar, Terry.
Terry, what do you think?
I hope so. I really hope so. You know, you look at the states. There's only a few states, as you know, that are going to go for Obama that seem to be solid, including Oregon. States like Colorado are, you know, could go either way. There's states all over the country that could go either way. It is really going to be a close race at this point. It is not going to be one side or the other. And I think, you know, Obama does have it to lose. I really do. The economy is not going to recover enough to help him. So it's got to be his strength, and I mean he has to do a Teddy Roosevelt here to win enough votes.
My opinion is the president really has to go after Mitt Romney now, and he has to put some distance between himself and particularly in these debates for this reason. I don't think people are talking about voter suppression enough.
I believe
that there is a significant chance. No, not a significant chance. Let me change that. If Mitt Romney wins, it is because of voter suppression.
Based on
current
polls,
there is no reason other thing that would keep him close. If it's close, the president would win it. But when you look at the numbers and the percentage of people and the change in the demographics now in this country, any way that this race goes clean without voter suppression on the level field, Barack Obama wins it. I think.
Let me give some good news. In Texas, they beat back the case on voter suppression.
Texas
in
was,
Florida,
was red.
They beat back the case.
Yeah.
In Ohio, they beat back the case.
The only
significant state where so far they're succeeding in vote suppression is Pennsylvania. That was a lower court judge. This week, I want everyone to look out for it in the press. This week, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court will rule on that case. Pennsylvania might be the only state where they really succeed.
I have an important question.
Yeah, Mark. September 13th. This should be
Is it possible that these cases could proceed to the Supreme Court
it
before the election? Because
it
if they do, I can already tell you what's going to happen. If they do,
I can guarantee you
the Supreme Court is going to find them constitutional. In fact, they'll probably say, well, they didn't go far enough. They should have actually just, all minorities shouldn't be allowed to vote.
Garland, you're right about Alito. You're right about Scalia. You're right about Thomas. And you're right about, who am I thinking of? There's one more. Chief Justice Roberts, I don't know that he wants to do another Bush v. Gore. I think he cares about the institution enough. I don't know that he wants to hand. But I'll tell you this. Enough fuss needs to be made so that the Supreme Court knows, and it's all directed at Chief Justice Roberts, he knows that if he doesn't allow Americans to vote, we will blame Chief Justice Roberts being a tyrant and a dictator and for choosing our president just the way they chose George W. Bush. And the Supreme Court needs to be very understood that if they illegitimately put back Jim Crow laws and don't let American citizens vote, we know who to blame. Chief Justice Roberts will end American democracy.
Because
if it goes to the Supreme Court, the announcement needs to be made everywhere, on radio and on TV, that the state of American democracy rests in Chief Justice Roberts' hands, and the question is whether he believes in democracy or whether he's willing to rip up the Constitution.
And this is actually broader, Terry. This is actually broader than Jim Crow laws. You know, as odd as it is to say, because Jim Crow laws were specifically aimed at African Americans. They are going after voter demographics.
Oh, yeah.
They're going after Latinos. You got Juan Crow.
Right.
You know, and then
Juan Crow,
yeah,
right?
Juan Crow, and I guess a lot of kids and young girls are named Ashley, so Ashley Crow, maybe? I don't know.
Well, no, but they're really going after young people.
Lady Gaga Crow.
Because after African Americans, the best demographic for Barack Obama in 2008 was young people. It's even better than Latinos. It was like blacks, Jews, young people, Latinos.
Actually, seniors aren't going to make out very well.
Well,
this is the kind of thing that President Obama has to lead on.
Yeah.
And that's my key point.
But he did mention it at the convention, and I was very proud of him.
But they got to go after it. Terry, they really got to go after it. They really got to make a fuss after that, I think. I think they got to raise holy hell about this.
And I'll tell you
something. Obama should be raising holy hell about this. He should be saying to the public, look, the Republicans are trying to suppress voting. The Republicans are trying to keep you from choosing your president. That's what the Republicans are doing.
Here's
He's got to be that more than that direct.
If it doesn't go to the Supreme Court, the only state we really have to worry about is Pennsylvania. We won in Ohio. We won in Florida. We won in Texas. I don't mean that to sound complacent. I mean that you got to celebrate your victories when you get them. And they were really powerful opinions written many times by judges appointed by Republican presidents saying in Texas, you shouldn't have to pay $22 and drive 250 miles to have the right to vote. That's a poll tax, and you can't do that. It's illegal on the Constitution. Or what they said in Ohio, this idea that you let some people vote and not let other people vote, that's just not equal protection under the laws. So,
and they don't even need to take it to the Supreme Court. All they need to do is appeal it, get injunctions, et cetera, and that, again, will stop the issue.
So far, Pennsylvania is the only one in place.
Which is why Obama has to lead the charge.
While we're at it, I want to mention one more time where we are. We are right here at Ben's next door, 1211 U Street. We're going to be here every Tuesday in September, having a blast from 7 to 8 p.m. right next to Ben's next door. Good food.
And I just
mentioned Chili Bowl. Yep, next to Ben's Chili Bowl. And I just want to let everybody know, Ben's next door has this really awesome, they've got
a mural. New
mural
out,
Yeah, they've got this big mural on the side of the wall. It's got President Obama, Chuck Brown, Donnie Simpson, and Bill Cosby. Really cool mural, and I believe, Thursday morning at 11? Thursday morning at 11 a.m. They're going to be having a ceremony, unveiling. So Thursday morning at 11.
So come check that out. Come and there's still time, by the way, to come up to Ben's next door and join us for the second half of the show, which begins right after this.
Bring your talent and experience to help chart the course for the future of radio with a vision in the nation's capital. Consider running for the WPFW Local Station Board. Pacifica has extended the deadline for all stations in the network, including WPFW. You now have until 8 p.m. on Thursday, September 13th, to submit nomination materials. For more information or to register to run for the LSB, please call me, John Bush, Election Supervisor, at 202-704-2359. You can also download the candidate packet by clicking the Elections button on our website, wpfw.org, or drop by the station at 2390 Champlain Street Northwest in Washington, D.C.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. We are here live at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. This is the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine with
Garland Nixon.
And somewhere in the wilds of the West is
Terry D. Kester, and you know, I'm really glad to be on the air with you guys, you know, and broadcasting and debating and all that. But I miss the warmth of being right next to you. I just want you to know that
it's easier to mock you, Terry, when you're right beside us. I almost feel bad picking on you when you're so far away. I'd rather do it in front of your face.
I'm trying to help you guys and support you every way I can. So if you can mock me more easily when I'm not there, go right ahead.
No. I'd rather do it in front of your face than behind your back.
And you notice Mark said he almost feels bad. He doesn't feel bad mocking you, but almost.
I'll still do it.
Yeah, right.
Also, so as I said, Terry's probably on the lam somewhere.
Right. I mean, you know, without me and the maturity and the sagacity, I mean, what do you have?
Wisdom, which actually is sagacity.
Wisdom, wit, and sagacity.
Wisdom, wit, and sagacity.
We never can. Well, he's sagacity, so one of us has to be wisdom, and one. I'll tell you what we'll do, Mark.
I'll be wit.
You can do wisdom. I'll be wisdom, and we'll just switch from week to week. So next week you can be wisdom, and I'll be wit.
Fair enough. Well,
that'll work.
As long as I'm not a half wit, I'll take it.
There we go.
Hey. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. As I said, we are at Ben's Next Door. We are here every Tuesday in September. This is the last month we're at Ben's prior to Election Tuesday.
Yeah.
So if you want to come down and discuss the election or anything else, please come on down. There's always time to join us, get some good food. And
that's one thing about Ben's. I got to tell everyone, they've got good food. You know, Ben's Chili Bowl, everybody goes there for the chili and the dogs and stuff, and it's great. We love that stuff. I'm telling you right now,
you want
some really good stuff.
Shrimp and grits.
In this city, this is a disguised joke. They've got really good food here. They show the games if you want to come down on a Sunday and, you know, watch the NFL games, the Skins, RG3, all that stuff. You can come down here. There's lots of people hanging out.
But what you really want is every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. Yeah. to join the Raucous Caucus back in the mezzanine. You can see Garland and me and Terry via computer. Because he's, as I said, hiding from the law.
In fact, I think I'm going to come down here this Sunday and watch. I'm going to come down here this Sunday myself and watch the Skins game and jump up and down and scream and go nuts.
So,
you know, another thing we got to mention about being at Ben's, guys, is the great staff there. And that's
true.
No question about it. And just got to really thank the staff. They're fantastic. The waiters and everybody else, the maitre d's, the bartenders, they've been fantastic.
It's a great-looking place. Once again, they've got an awesome mural on the side of Ben's now. It has President Obama, Chuck Brown, Donnie Simpson, Bill Cosby. This Thursday at 11 a.m., they're going to kind of have an unveiling, you know, ceremony, and they're going to, you know, kind of show the mural to everybody and get this thing started. So if you're in the area, stop by Thursday morning at 11 a.m. That ought to be pretty fun.
Who knows about the show?
Is going to be etched into that mural pretty soon?
What's that?
Isn't the Raucous Caucus going to be etched?
We have our sign out there, so I just need someone to put our sign in there.
I'm thinking that, you know, right next to it, somewhere between, like, the Jefferson Memorial and the Lincoln and the MLK Memorial.
Well, we can just go between, like, Obama and Cosby and Chuck Brown, and it will be our three faces, right? That'll work. Obama. You can have Donnie Simpson, all right, Terry? Yeah.
Okay. But still, I think it's time for the Raucous Caucus Monument, because people may want to come from all over the world.
That's true.
To see our monument. I mean, I think...
Or to deface it.
Yeah, well...
I can tell you where it goes. I can tell you where it goes, guys. In my travels west, I did stop by the, you know, Mount Rushmore. That's nice. We've got to get our monument right next to Crazy Horse. That's where it's got
to be. I mean,
we fit with Crazy Horse.
Well, speak for yourself there, Terry. Okay, so...
I feel by belly.
Anyway, let's get back to the election, because you were saying how close it is, Terry. I got to tell you, I don't want anyone to be complacent, particularly in Virginia, because Obama really needs to be in Virginia. But I've gone through the states, and let me tell you how I think it's going to lay out. I can tell you every state in the United States. Let me tell you how the swing states go.
I don't
go.
Think we have time for
it. I don't think the swing states go.
You know.
I think he's going to win both New Hampshire.
Are you going to count the votes?
He's going to win New Hampshire and Nevada. That puts him at 247 electoral votes. Michigan's for sure. Pennsylvania's for sure, unless they cheat.
Yeah, well, I was about to say,
he needs 23 electoral votes more. All right, let me tell you where does he come from. Virginia and Wisconsin is all he needs.
But what if he doesn't get Virginia? What does he do?
He can win Florida alone, and the election's over.
Okay.
All right, if he doesn't win Florida, all right, he can win Ohio in any one of a number of states. Could be Virginia, Wisconsin, Colorado, or Iowa, any one of them in Ohio, and he wins the race. If he does not win Florida and Ohio, he's got to win Virginia and Wisconsin, or Virginia, Colorado, and Iowa. And if he doesn't win Virginia, Florida, or Ohio, he could still eke it out with Wisconsin, Colorado, and Iowa. But that's hard to do. Really what he needs is either Florida or Ohio or Virginia.
I was about to say.
And I got
to
tell you, Florida is the hardest to get of those.
Yeah.
So Ohio may be what gives him the election right there and there. But if Ohio falls down, Virginia is his backup. And Ohio's not enough. He still needs one more swing state. That's how important Virginia is. If you are a Virginia voter, sorry to Maryland and D.C. voters.
I don't
matter so much.
But
for your Virginia voter, you may well determine.
I would say this, that President Obama can lose Virginia and still win.
Yes.
I think Mitt Romney, if he loses Virginia, he's done.
That's right.
Number one. Number two, I would say...
Romney has to win Florida, Ohio, and Virginia.
Yeah, I would say this. If the president loses Ohio and Florida, I don't think he's going to win. You know what I mean?
He can still win with Virginia.
But the road gets so much tougher if he loses Ohio and Florida.
Yeah. Well, if he wins Florida, it's over, as far as I'm concerned. Because there's enough electoral votes.
Guys, it's bigger than that. I mean, Obama's got to win it, that's for sure. But it's also, we've got to win seats in the Senate.
Yeah.
We've got to regain seats in the Congress. And even if we do that, if you look at the maps and you look at the states, which I know you guys have done, the country right now is so divided, it's frightening. And it's going to stay divided however this election turns out.
Yep.
And one of the few ways, one of the few ways that Obama could possibly lessen some of that division, besides obviously making the big point about a government that cares about you, but is showing, frankly, that he is a tough guy. I mean, he's really got to show that. He's really got to show leadership almost, I don't even like to say this, but this is just political reality. He's got to show leadership almost in a militaristic way in order to get people, not just the people who are voting for him, but the people of the country to calm down a little bit and unify just the slightest bit.
He needs to stand his ground.
If we don't unify a little bit more, it don't matter who wins.
He needs to stand his ground. And the point you're making about Congress is very important.
Yeah,
we are behind the eight ball in congressional races. In the Senate, it just happens that there's about two Democratic seats up for every Republican seat up.
Yep.
I think the Republicans are going to win seats in the Senate.
Yeah.
I think the Democrats can hold on. It may well be 50-50 with Biden breaking the tie, but it's not impossible that Republicans get to 51 and take over the Senate. I think we can maintain the Senate. I also think we can win some seats in the House, but the House is difficult too because 2010 was the big Republican blowout,
right.
And they went to all the state legislatures and they gerrymandered the heck out of them.
Yep.
And so that means that even if the Democrats win big in the House, they probably still won't take over the House because of all the gerrymandering. So my prediction is the Democrats lose seats in the Senate but still barely maintain it. They win a few seats in the House, so the Republicans maintain it. We are still going to be in the same gridlock that we've been in the last 2 years, which is why Terry's right. Unless President Obama uses a reelection to say, look, the American people made a decision. They want us to work together. Republicans, it's not my way or the highway. And if you continue to insist it is, then you know what? Go off the fiscal cliff. Fine with me. It'll be your fault. And everyone will blame you. Call their bluff. That's what Bill Clinton did.
Yeah,
and even today, I don't think they'll do it.
I agree. If we are fortunate enough that he wins, I do think he's going to have to call the bluff. I do think of the GOP, he's going to have to stand his ground. Because as we know, no matter what he does, those crazies and the Tea Party crazies are not, I mean, they will, you know, they're going to try to stop everything. They're not going to go along with anything he does under any circumstances. There is no way to change that. But I do think he's going to have to stand his ground and create some animosity to create some friction within the Republican Party. Because they, just like I'm having a brain cramp.
The fiscal cliff?
Yeah, last summer, we couldn't agree on.
The debt ceiling. They wanted the United States to default.
Like the debt ceiling, where what happened there was the Republican Party within the party had a lot of fights because there were people there that knew they couldn't do this.
Right.
I think he's going to have to set them on themselves at times by saying, okay, you know what, you guys?
You want to destroy the country? There you go.
I'm going to get on TV and I'm going to say to the American people, this is what we need to do.
Heading for collapse.
And if we don't do this, this is going to happen. You better pressure the Republicans to do it and get out of the way because the business people in the Republican Party don't want to lose all their stock money and they're not going to let us go off the cliff. And he has to send them to fight amongst themselves.
He needs to do what Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton both did. Go over the heads of Congress and talk directly to the American people.
Yep.
There were very few Oval Office addresses by President Obama. I recall a couple.
Yep.
They were both about military things. Terry, did he ever give an Oval Office address on domestic policy? I don't remember one.
And even when he did give his addresses, you know, he never gave us that sense of, you know, the best part of the campaign, as far as I'm concerned, is when Obama said, "I am the president."
Yeah.
That was the high point from Obama's speech, as far as I'm concerned. And that showed grit. I'm not a candidate. I am the president. And that's the kind of approach he's got to take across the boards. And let me ask you guys a question. You know, if he doesn't come, are the other Democrats, the senators and the congressmen, et cetera, given our crazy country and media and money and everything else involved, are they going to campaign with President Obama? Doesn't he have to create that? You know, coalition as well to get those senators and candidates to want him to be beside them and vice versa?
And I think
is he doing that?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Depends where. Like, take Tim Kaine. And by the way, the Virginia Senate election is absolutely neck and neck. And I need to do another show where I discuss exactly how George Allen is a racist. And I don't use that term lightly. George Allen, you know, I'm going to say it because it's important people know. George Allen, the former Virginia governor, the guy running against former Governor Tim Kaine for the Senate, grew up in California.
Mm-hmm.
In California, okay, if he was a Southerner, you might wonder about it. In California, it wasn't just that he loved his Dixie flags. He had a Confederate pin that he would wear to school every day in Southern California. Now, you know, whatever you think of an Alabaman or a Georgian wearing a Dixie pin, and I don't like it, it's quite another thing for some kid in California to openly identify with the racist South. He had a lynching rope in his law office. This is not just the guy who found some young man from Virginia of Indian background and called him Macaca. This is a guy with a long racist past, and the election is neck and neck. People have forgotten what a horrible person George Allen is. And to answer your question, I don't remember, I think it was you, Garland, or Terry, I think take Tim Kaine. In Northern Virginia, Obama and Tim Kaine, they're going to be together.
Right.
In Southern and Southwest Virginia,
right,
Tim Kaine's going to be on his own and
right,
trying to get those votes without Obama.
Well, actually, Mark, if I see a, you know, an Alabama or a Georgian without a Confederate flag, I say to him, "Hey, you lost your Confederate flag pin."
I mean, George Allen, who in the 1970s wore in California a Confederate flag pin to school? What does that mean, that this 18-year-old boy is going to high school in Southern California, and he's identifying with the Confederate South? I don't know how you explain it other than
it kind of points out, not to mention his behavior afterwards. You know, it kind of points out, as we've been saying, or at least I've been saying, these guys aren't just, you know, politicians that disagree with. These guys are dangerous.
Yeah.
They truly are, economically, racially, in terms of immigration, et cetera, certainly in terms of the economy for the middle class. Do you know today that 60% of Americans, the lower 60%, only control 2% of the economy?
Absolutely.
That's right.
That's incredible.
Well, and Terry, 1% of Americans have one-third of the nation's wealth.
All that whole family, the whole business, they control something like one-fourth. The oligarchical power that exists in this country today is totally out of control. You add to that racism problems, immigration, and, you know, George Allen type people. I mean, we're screwed.
Terry,
And, you know, Terry, what has to happen, what President Obama has to expose is, with all this, with all these issues we have, Mitt Romney's plan is massive, is five, he wants tax cuts for the wealthy
$5 trillion.
Five times larger than the ones that George Bush had.
That's right.
Had. Five times.
Large. Sheldon Adelson alone gets $2 billion. $2 billion for one man, the same man who's giving $100 million to the Republican race. Do you know how hard it is for Obama to raise $100 million?
Yeah.
His average donation is like $10 or $20. He has to go to millions of people to match one casino magnet who's going to make out like a bandit.
I think we got to expose that. I think we have to expose that because, actually, it's something that, I don't know if you guys remember, we talked about right here on the Raucous Caucus. We've talked about that there are people who are giving away $100 million, $200 million because
right,
they're going to make much more than right, that back. And I think it has to be exposed. This guy, President Obama's terrible, and, you know, he's taking the country down, and I'll do anything to get him out. Come on. That's not what it is. It's that you're going to get $2 billion in your pocket.
President Obama and I mean this with some admiration, President Obama is primarily a practical man.
Yes, he is.
I remember way back when in the first election, one of his aides saying, basically, he's not a man of principle. He's a man that's practical. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have principles. But his first goal, his first personality trait is practical approaches to things. That's great when you're in the Oval Office with your own cabinet, even though your cabinet may be half Republican. That's great. But outside of that, practicality is not what's called for. He's got to do everything that we've been talking about today, and we have to require it of him. If we get into a town meeting, we got to scream for these kind of questions. When are you going to fight for us? When are you really going to fight for us? And the other thing he has to do, and he can do it, is point out how important and good government is for us. Whether it be with the drought that we're fighting, whether it be with, you know, the hurricanes that we're having to deal with, whatever the issue is, without government, you don't have a country.
I think he's starting.
We've got to get rid of that stupid myth that government is the problem. Thank you, Ronald Reagan. May he roll over in his grave and stay face down. Pardon me for saying.
I think, Terry, he is starting to make the argument about government. Look, we the people in the Constitution, right? I mean, that's we. That's the idea that we're in this together. He's starting to make that argument. The argument he's not making, though, and frankly, I was very disappointed not to see it in his acceptance speech, was he's not running against Congress. Harry Truman did it best. He talked about a do-nothing Congress.
Yeah.
Everyone said that he wasn't going to win, and he won an amazing race in 1948. The reason why, if you are mad that Obama has not succeeded as much as you want him to, if you're mad at that he hasn't done a jobs bill, that's the fault of Congress. If you're mad he hasn't done the public option in health care or universal health care, that's the fault of Congress. If you're mad at him for not getting cap and trade done or the environment, I mean, it's not president. You can argue he hasn't fought hard enough, and we've made that argument, and I'll agree with you. But at the end of the day, it's not Obama's desire not to pass these things.
Right.
His desire is in the right direction.
Yeah.
He's being rejected by Congress. He's being rejected by the filibuster. And if the Democrats do maintain the Senate, this would be the perfect year to end the filibuster once and for all, because the next elections that are coming are going to be pro-democratic elections. That's just the cycle. One of the reasons why Harry Reid got scared and didn't end the filibuster in this election back in 2010 is because everyone knew 2012 was going to be weighted toward the Republicans in the Senate race. If we have 50 votes and Joe Biden is our vice president and can break the tie, we need to end the filibuster once and for all, get rid of this relic, and let the majority rule.
Well, here's the thing I think about that.
You mean get rid of the supermajority, too?
Yeah, two things I think we should...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Get rid of the 60 votes. It should require 50 votes plus the vice president or 51 votes to pass anything in the Senate. That's what the Constitution says. The filibuster needs to die.
Well, I think two things here. I think, number one, the president needs to run against the House. I don't think the president should run against Congress as a whole. He has to be wary because the Democrats control the Senate.
Okay, so
and so you really
run
have
against
to go
House Republicans.
Run against the House Republicans.
You know, Paul Ryan gives him that option. That's the nice thing about it.
And
he's right there, sitting there.
Yeah, it's not going to be hard to do. Right. So I do think he needs to do that. You know, I hear what you're saying about the filibuster, except there is one issue. I don't think this is really a great time, because the bottom line is they're not going to get, if the Republicans have the House, they're not going to get anything to work with, even if they don't have the filibuster one way or the other.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so it's not the time, because if they took the House, it would be now. But here's the other side of it.
I don't think they're going to take the House.
If the Republicans get the White House and the Senate and the House, rest assured, they're going to end the filibuster.
That's true.
I can tell you that right now. There is no question. And they're going to jam through policies that will make your toes curl. Well, my toes are already curled, but you get the point.
There is that reality. That's true. Another reality that he's got to face and get tough on is the upcoming, when the automatic cuts go into effect. You know,
the fiscal cliff we're going over.
From the last voting bill on the economy and the debt and everything else. When those things go into effect, President Obama's got to point out that if they don't elect Democrats to support him, they will not be able to prevent those automatic cuts coming in. The Republicans will push it until those cuts do come
in. Except for the military.
I actually think that if the Republicans won't compromise, and I'd be willing to bet, a lot of money that they won't, I think we should go off the fiscal cliff. I don't think it'll last. I think we go off the fiscal cliff for a few days, and let me tell you why. It's kind of a crazy thing. All the Republicans they're in debt to Grover Norquist, right? Grover Norquist says, you have to promise that you'll never raise taxes. If they go off the fiscal cliff, and Republicans are going to say, extend the Bush tax cuts. If Obama says, no, I'm not going to extend the Bush tax cuts for millionaires, and Obama says, fine, we'll go off the fiscal cliff, we'll all jump together, we'll go off the fiscal cliff, and then the tax rates will go back up, and then the deficit problem is gone, because the Bush tax cuts caused the deficit problem, and then Obama can say, all right, now I want you to support tax cuts for the middle class. The only way you can raise taxes back on the rich is actually to go off that cliff. I don't support going off the cliff. I don't think it would be good for the economy. I think it's a bad idea. I wish Republicans hadn't forced it through. But at the end of the day, someone has to stand firm. And if President Obama wins re-election, he needs to say, look, the American people decided that my vision prevails. And if you don't accept that, the American people are going to blame you. And he needs to get on TV like Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton did, go over the heads of the Republicans in Congress and say, I need you to call the Republicans now and tell them you don't want economic disaster. It's entirely in their hands, but I will not compromise on the majority of Americans who reelected me the president.
Yeah, and that would, in fact, show that he's willing to stand and fight. And the bottom line is this. You know, Terry, you're right about him standing and fighting to demonstrate to us that he'll fight. But here's the other part of the second half of it. He's going to have no choice if he wins, because the nutcases on the far right, the Tea Party people, will never go along with anything that he says. If he says it's dark, they're going to say it's light. It doesn't matter. He's going to have no alternative. The only way he'll get things done is the way he has the last year or so, and that is through his using his presidential powers to do things such as the Dream Act. That's the only way he's going to do it for 4 years, because they won't go anyway. So he's going to have to start off by standing up to them, by fighting them, and letting them know it's going to be a long 4 years for you guys too.
Here's the
we've come up with a solution, guys, and I'm proud of us. I really am. All we've got to do is persuade all of our
listeners
and all of our fans and everybody with WPFW to write President Obama and say, look, the Raucous Caucus should manage your campaign.
There you go. You know.
And
more importantly, man,
we won't get to be millionaires out of it, but we'll do it. And by golly, we've got the answer. There's no question.
We need to be the triumvirate chief of staff.
And Terry can be the president's speechwriter. Terry, you can be a speechwriter.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to.
And if, Garland, we have trouble, we throw Terry out and then we take over.
And we blame him. We say it's a, you know,
he's
Hey, listen, did you hear, because this amazed me, again, this was last week on Meet the Press, Romney, I mean, it's really hard to keep this phony, because that's what he is, in check, and all his flip-flops. So after passing Romneycare in Massachusetts, and then being against Obamacare, he then comes out, and he says, you know what, I'm okay. Oh, wait, you're showing me more. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. He said on Meet the Press, I'm okay with a lot of Obamacare. I like not having a ban on pre-existing conditions. And the children in there. And here's the dirty secret that Republicans know and but Obama needs to understand. His policies have strong American support, whether it's healthcare, you know, whether it's not discriminating people based on pre-existing conditions or keeping young people on their parents' plan, whether it's tax cuts. The vast majority of Americans support raising taxes on millionaires.
Yep.
His policies have strong support. The Republican policies do not. So much so that Romney's doing massive flip-flops trying to argue that he likes some things but not other things.
Or hiding what he's going to do.
Right.
He can't.
What he's going to do is he's going to agree with you can't be excluded from insurance and all that stuff. But then he's going to go ahead and make sure that Medicare goes into vouchers. And once it goes into the vouchers, you've got vouchers are the same as being in the private market with your 401(k) or your 401(k). When the market crashes, the vouchers crash. You're screwed. Sure.
Not only that, that's
exactly what the Republicans are going to do.
Not only that, if you are a senior, let's say you're 80 years old, and they give you a voucher and they say, go out to Blue Cross Blue Shield and buy a health care policy. What company is going to sell a health care policy to someone that they know is going to cost them $50,000 to $100,000 a year?
They're just not going to sell the most minimal.
You know, they'll come.
You say, if you climb up 10 flights of stairs, we'll sell you the policy.
Right. They'll say, now, and this, it covers hangnails and ingrown hair bumps.
Right. But it doesn't cover cancer.
Yeah,
hey, Bill has walked in apparently just in time because he wants to add his 2 cents. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, my 2 cents is my big suggestion for the president, and I hope everyone, somebody can get to his people and to him, make it soundbite friendly. Instead of saying we all need government, say we remember poison spinach.
I just say, you know, we all need each other. Yeah. We the people are in charge, not I the individual. I mean, it's the whole point of America, the whole point of the Constitution is that we are not individuals all running and doing our – we're in this together.
Well, that's what the Republicans would tell you.
Well, keep
and in – that's what it's all about.
But yeah, poison spinach works for me. My favorite is arsenic in the river. But you can do poison spinach.
But you know, once again, Bill, it gets to the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter. If you listen to, you know, it's the old what I always say: liberty versus freedom. The right uses the word liberty to represent individualism and a very radical form of individual liberty is an individual's liberty to go about and do what they want, as opposed to freedom as a group. The slaves didn't want liberty. Liberty would do you no good. They had to have freedom first. Groups need freedom. And this is radical, radical form of individualism versus a pluralism. Are we 300 million individuals or are we a country?
Which brings me back
exactly
to the
right.
conventions.
And the liberty that they speak of is the liberty to have all the ammunition you want, all the, you know, overloaded automatic clips that you can put into your gun. That's the liberty they're fighting for.
They're not
fighting for a liberty that allows people to flourish and to have treatment for disease and to have education. They're not for that kind of liberty at all.
And that brings me back to the conventions where we began, because one of the best things that Bill Clinton and Michelle Obama and Barack Obama and, frankly, speaker after speaker from Deval Patrick, they all brought up was democratic values, these liberties that you speak of, Terry,
yeah.
The American dream, the chance to get ahead that Michelle Obama so wonderfully when she's talking about her father, the idea that if you work hard and you play by the rules, you can succeed in America even if you're born dirt poor. Even if you're born the wrong color, you can marry the person of your choice. You can go out and get education. You can actually afford to get an education. You can get health care. These basic things that you need to survive and flourish is what America's all about. It's not I got mine, Jack. It's let's all help each other succeed, because we all succeed more when other Americans succeed. And that's the argument they made at the convention. I think they made it really well.
They did. And if we can add that kind of compassion with fighting, you know, then Obama's got a big chance. But this is going to be close. This is going to be
it
so
is going to be close.
It's going to be scary, guys.
I do think that historians will say that the most important part of the election of 2012, I don't think I'm overstating it, maybe you think I am, was Bill Clinton's speech. Was the pivotal moment when Obama pulled ahead and never looked back.
Either that, or if he doesn't win, they'll say the most important thing was voter suppression.
Well,
and I would suspect that if we turn on the TV on election day and we see long lines of African Americans and Latinos standing in line and being told, nope, sorry, you don't have the, not that you don't have an ID, you don't have the right ID, and
right.
turned away from the polls, you know, there'd probably be some problems as a result of that.
There are organizations out there, and I've been called by them, and I'll be doing it, going around to videotape any transactions you see like that at polls.
Well, I'm
going to
be working.
The name of the organization, but people should check that and volunteer to videotape at polls to make sure this election happens.
One more time.
Okay,
let me say,
I'm going to be working in the state of Virginia to protect people's right to vote, and I encourage everyone to do the same. Be a poll watcher. Help make sure that people can
yes.
vote.
One more time, right here at Ben's Next Door, Ben's Chili Bowl, they've got this awesome new mural. It's got President Obama, Chuck Brown. You got to see that. Chuck Brown's on there. Donnie Simpson and Bill Cosby. This Thursday at 11 a.m., they're going to have a ceremony for this and an unveiling, so you can come here and check that out. So that's President Obama, Chuck Brown, Donnie Simpson, Bill Cosby. You got to come down and get a picture of that.
Yes,
that's D.C. That's awesome right
we
there.
We are the Rockies Caucus. We are here on PFW. W89.3 FM
in
every
Washington.
Tuesday night, 7 to 8 p.m. Every Tuesday, we are here at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. Please come join us next Tuesday
in September.
Bye.
That's all, folks. I'm an Greetings. I'm Askia Muhammad, news director, and I host and produce Spectrum Today.